Stampede Blue. What we talking about? Indianapolis, AFC South. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Topics, loaded like offense. Colt-centric, talk about it often. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Do it big.
Welcome to another Stampede Blue Colts cast, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Matt Dainley. Thank you guys for joining me once again. This week, we've got a great show for you today. We've got Eric Edholm from Pro Football Weekly. He's going to join us here and discuss kind of his what are his problems with the Colts roster. So we're trying to kind of get a little bit of a feel from some people who don't necessarily cover the Colts every day or anything. We want to see what people, other people's opinions are of this, and then we'll see where the conversation goes after that. As always, make sure you guys are going to Apple iTunes or Apple Podcasts and giving the show a rating and review. Those are always helpful. Thank you for subscribing. On YouTube, make sure you guys are continuing to do that. Spread the word, share the show. Always appreciate you guys being involved in everything we do here at Stampede Blue. So now I will welcome our guest on the show, Eric Edholm. Thank you for joining us today, my man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It's an interesting time of year. Everybody's kind of itching for things to get started, but still wanting to get a little time with, you know, the personal life before football consumes our worlds. But yeah, it's a great time, man.
Yes, absolutely. I was just complaining about how this offseason has been so slow and so boring almost. It's every offseason. But then come about, you know, mid-August, mid-September, you're like, man, I have like no free time whatsoever at that point.
Oh yeah. Boring is out the window at that point. We're stressed. It's hot outside. It's kind of uncomfortable. And yeah, we're praying for regular season football after, you know, whatever goes on in the preseason.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we've got you here today to kind of discuss what your three biggest problems are with the Colts roster. Now, a lot of people are going to say, you know, that everything rides on Andrew Luck. And of course, sure, you know, everybody agrees with that. But myself, and I think a lot of people who are covering the Colts closely, at least Colts fans, are definitely kind of done with that. Just that qualifier almost, if Andrew Luck's healthy. It seems like it's really run its course with people around Indy. So we just want to kind of move off of that. We get it. If the Colts are going to succeed, Andrew Luck has to be amazing and on point, because this roster is not up to, you know, a guaranteed type of playoff caliber team. There's no question about that. We understand that. But Andrew Luck does make up for a lot of bad play for both the defense and the offense, honestly, in a lot of ways that he can keep the team on the field and everything else. So we're good on that. But let's talk about a couple other positions, Eric. What is your biggest problem with the Colts roster?
Well, first I have to say I'm shocked that Colts fans, you know, are sick of a story that's been dragging on for like 2 years now. I'm stunned to hear this news. Right? I would have thought they'd be embracing this thing. Yeah, right. Yeah, obviously that's the qualifier. Let's put Luck in, you know, the quarterback position in a separate category. And assuming he's full health, you know, let's say whatever it takes to get him from July 25th or whenever camp starts up till, you know, the first week, second week of September, if he's on course to start, play week one against the Bengals, great. He's got to get help, obviously, from the offensive line, but I think just as much from the receivers, you know, and you and I were kind of talking through chat a little bit, you know, that tight end position might be a team strength for all we know in terms of pass catching. I still think Eric Ebron has untapped potential. You know, we know what Jack Doyle can do as a safety valve, but, you know, seeing people emerge other than T.Y. Hilton and seeing Hilton, you know, do more consistently is obviously huge too, but finding solutions at wide receiver I think has to be on that list. I could, you know, easily pick the O-line. We know the situation there as well, but for me, having Hilton play like he did during the kind of the heyday of his and Luck's breakthroughs, finding, you know, whether it's Ryan Grant, whether it's, you know, Deion Kane has maybe made a little bit of noise for a 6th-round pick, and other solutions in that group. Do I think it's an outstanding unit? No, I don't. And I do wonder what Frank Reich and company get to do with that. Like, how do they do personnel packages? Does it put two tight ends on the field way more often than most teams? Maybe. Does it rely on them running the ball? Perhaps, but that's, you still got to find solutions there, I think.
Mm-hmm. And I get that as much. I'm going to play devil's advocate just a little bit here, though. And I get that, you know, you've got T.Y. Hilton, but you've got a couple guys in Chester Rogers and Ryan Grant where people are saying that those guys can be definitely some complimentary guys. But the reality is that neither one of them have played a significant amount of games, have a significant amount of catches in the NFL. That's reality. You know, that's something that Colts fans can't look past. Yes, there is potential there for those guys, but we don't really know what's coming. There's not a good bevy of evidence there for either of those guys. But you've got T.Y. Hilton. You've got basically a perennial 1,000-yard receiver. You know, you've got a guy who can stretch the field, who has been, you know, more than capable of doing some crossing patterns, trying to get into the kitchen of the linebackers and get some open space afterwards. But the Colts have had this template almost for their receivers this offseason and past offseason under Chris Ballard. A lot of these guys are over 6'2" or above. A lot of them are around that 200 pounds, 215. I mean, there are some big bodies in there. And the good thing about a lot of those guys, if not all of them, is that they've got a great amount of speed. So I think that we can assume, and like I said, Colts fans are assuming that Andrew Luck comes back and he's good to go. And at least, you know, by maybe week four, week five, he's shaking the rust off enough to where he's pretty close to where he was at in 2016. So with that, is it possible that this receiving core could not be such a detriment to the team, I guess, or such a weakness, I suppose, is a probably better way to describe it, with Andrew Luck being able to make this wide receiver unit grow?
Yeah, no, there's no question about it. You know, I remember thinking probably even less about the New York Jets wide receivers heading into camp last year and thinking, my goodness, who's going to step up for him?
Right.
And then Quincy Enunwa goes down too. Mm-hmm. So they're not perfectly comparable, but it's the same idea of, you know, even though they're different players, Enunwa was the Hilton of the unit in the sense that, okay, you know what you have, you feel good about that. After that, a lot of questions, a lot of talent, a lot of upside, a lot of potential, a lot of interesting players. You know, I thought Ishmael, the kid from Syracuse, was draftable.
Yeah.
The number of balls he caught as a possession receiver. So they have some, you know, and that's where I think Chris Ballard has always done his best dirty work is, you know, if going back to his previous jobs as well in Chicago and Kansas City, finding some of those later round gems, finding guys who are going to make the roster and stick. You know, they may not be special players, but they're going to be useful. So that's how I think they can kind of maximize. You look at the Jets last year, I mean, they got Jermaine Kearse, and they had a couple other guys step up.
Was it Robbie Anderson?
Yeah, I mean, look, and you know, there are a few players there that are like, okay, you can see them being NFL players for the next 5 years. So, yeah, that's kind of what I envision. I don't say best case scenario, but a very happy ending for the Colts if it works out that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that a lot of us are hopeful with how Philly ran their offense last year and kind of tried to do it in 2016 as well. It just wasn't as successful. The ability for getting the running backs to be playmakers out in space and in the receiving game, and then having that extra tight end who can actually allow Doyle to fall back into a little more of a traditional tight end role, be a very, very good hands catcher out of the backfield, but be able to, you know, be able to block in line as well and let Ebron kind of show the dynamic that he has and that he brings to the offense. I think that with those pieces, there's a lot of help or a lot of hope in Indianapolis that offense can kind of, you know, supplement each other in each position in ways that it won't make one of them feel like a real weakness.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would, you know, I would probably throw Nyheim Hines into that discussion as well, as far as a guy who, you know, seemed to be kind of they moved him around a little bit. You can call him a slot receiver if you want. You know, he's going to line up in multiple positions, that sort of thing. So, you know, it's not as if you have to have this wide receiver unit that sets the world on fire. When you talk to personnel people, sometimes there are some teams that place a pretty low positional value on that spot. You know, I mean, I don't remember the last time the New England Patriots used a high pick on a wide receiver. You know, when they did, they didn't really fare well. They found guys later. They found system fits, things like that. You know, Philly may have gone out and got Alshon Jeffrey. They may have, you know, used a couple of higher picks on some players, but it was more about development for them, you know, getting some of their players who struggled in 16 to play well in 17. You know, Nelson Aguilar is a good example, that sort of thing. You could see, you know, for them this year, you could see the kid from North Carolina take a step up. I'm blanking on his name, the Mac Hollins. So same kind of thing. I think a lot of this, you know, maybe you have to speed up the development a little bit, but what they did in Philly was, you know, one year to the next, you could see a big difference in a certain player. So, yeah, if that carries over to Indy, that's a great thing for them.
Yeah, Hollins is kind of a big guy, too. I didn't realize he was 6'4".
Yeah.
But he's big, and he's got some good wheels, too. I was impressed with him.
Yeah, and he also is a very interesting guy. I wrote about him at the Super Bowl. He's got pet snakes. He can solve a Rubik's Cube in like 2 minutes, you know, or whatever. I don't know what a really fast time is, but he's one of those really sort of nerdy, introspective guys. And you're right, he just happens to be 6'4", 220, and can run a sub 4.5 40. So that's not a bad place to be in life.
Yeah, no, not at all. I've seen too many snakes on Twitter and everything else lately. I don't want to hear about snakes. Man, those things freaking creep me out bad. But
yeah,
and then kind of as I'm looking back at the offense of Philly last year and the year before and all that, I mean, you see you know, Darren Sproles and kind of his usage in there, thinking of Nyheim Hines, and then looking at a guy like Kenyon Barner, even who was used a little bit. So I mean, there's definitely a kind of all-inclusive attitude, it looks like, to what Frank Reich could be bringing in with his offense. You know, if you can make a play and you've got some skills and you've got some speed and you can run routes, you're going to get into this offense and you better make something happen. One of my biggest concerns with some of the receivers being younger so much is that it doesn't, when you look back on all of Frank Reich's offenses, you look at what they did after the catch, and a lot of those guys really hovered around the 10-11 yards per catch ratio there, and there was very few. I think Malcolm Floyd was one who was like astronomical compared to everybody else, like 18 and something yards a catch back in the San Diego days. So that's something that is that. Do you think that? And I'm totally asking here because I don't know the answer to this. Do you think that that could be more of a product of the offense itself or just a lack of true playmakers? Because even Keenan Allen was one of those guys who was constantly just right around the 10, 11, 12. You know, nothing explosive really in 16, 17 range, nothing like that.
Yeah, that's a great question. And I hadn't realized that specifically, but, you know, it's something I'd probably have to do a little bit more homework on. But, you know, I can remember the first day of media access. Well, the first day of full team media access at the Super Bowl this year, I sat down at Reich's table, was doing a story on whatever. I mean, I probably wrote so much this week that week I can't remember, but I remember him saying, somebody kind of asking about, you know, his philosophy as far as spreading the ball around. That was a big topic that week about how they could pretty much go to, you know, any number of receivers. They had three running backs who hit, you know, kind of split up the load a little bit. And you know, he had a good sort of philosophy on how, you know, it's throw to the open guy. You know, get it to the you know, if they're putting six in the box, you run the ball. He said, you know, sometimes he makes football too complex. And right. He said, sometimes you just have to sort of boil it down a little bit and see, what's the defense giving you? If they're playing too high safeties, guess what? We're going to throw to the sticks every single time. You know, we're going to take what's there outside the numbers. We're going to go down the middle of the field, you know, and those may not produce a ton of home runs, but if you just sit there and smack singles and doubles all day and take your walks every now and then, guess what? You're going to score some points. So I assume that philosophy is going to carry over in a lot of ways. I don't know. Again, you know, it's not that T.Y. Hilton's not going to run a nine route this year. It's more that if he can draw that safety away and on the other side of the field, Chester Rogers running a comeback, give him the ball. Let's go to where the defense is not at. And that's going to be a big part of it, I think.
Yeah. And I think that a lot of Colts fans are kind of anxious to see who is that guy, you know, kind of like you mentioned about Miles or, now I lost his name already, Hollins. You know, is that a Keyshawn Hogan type guy this
Keyshawn
year?
Keyshawn Hogan.
Is it a guy, you know, like KJ Brent or somebody this year that comes out of this offense that nobody's really seeing coming, but ends up getting those 40 and 50 targets throughout the season and then can progress the following year into a larger role? I think that that's what everybody really wants to see. Everybody wants to see Deion Kane be everyone's, be the true underrated guy that everybody keeps talking about him being coming into the sixth round. with all that talent. You know, and everybody wants to see Reese Fountain develop, you know, and I think that people really would like to see Chester Rogers kind of hold his own this year, stay healthy, and be a large producer in this offense. So,
yeah,
that receiving core has a lot of potential, I think. But like you said, and I totally agree with this point, and this is on a lot of points with the Colts at different positions. There's just not a lot of proof. You know, everything is on speculation right now with a lot of the Colts positions because there's not a lot of proof and not a lot of experience at any of these. So that's ultimately what we're doing is guessing a lot of what we're going to see, you know, with rookies, second year guys.
And that's why, not to cut you off. Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. You know, I'm just now starting to kind of do my big picture. What do I think teams are going to do this year? You know, three or four of my season record predictions are going to be horrifically bad. Three or four on the other end are going to be the same way, either too low or too high. You know, everyone I've seen put one of these things out has the Colts winning four or five or six games. Okay. And right. I'm trying not to let anyone else's predictions influence me, but I've seen them here and there. Mm-hmm. To me, I think the only reason people are picking them so low is because they don't know about the quarterback. And, oh, yeah, by the way, they have a lot of questions about all these guys. Now, right. Is it going to take the stars kind of aligning a little bit? Maybe. But I really think that this could be a sneaky good division this year, mm-hmm. You know, where all four teams are plucky pretty good. And if the Colts kind of maximize, you know, I'm not on here to blow sunshine up your butt. I'm just saying I'm not as bearish on them as other people. I think there's going to be some good football played at times this year in Indy. And I just, like I said, I just, you're hoping against hope that things kind of develop. And because like you said, there are so many questions right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So, we got done with the receivers. Now we'll get to another one here in just a second, but folks, as you know, the Colts Cast is always sponsored by Mike Ernest and his Indy Home Pros team. If you're looking for a house or you're looking to sell your house in the Indianapolis area and anywhere, put the number one real estate team in Indiana on your side by calling Mike Ernest at 317-285-9691. Find him online also at CircleCityForSale.com. Again, that's 317-285-9691 or CircleCityForSale.com. Let Mike Ernest and his team get you your dream house because this guy is doing work in Indianapolis. So make sure you guys are looking him up. Eric, let's talk about another position here. What's the next position that most kind of has you concerned for the Colts going into the 2018 season?
Yeah, I think I believe I picked with you the cornerback position and also the linebackers. Those are two spots that, you know, again, I understand the offensive line questions. I think that group will work itself out. I think there's actually pretty good talent there. So
right.
I would look at linebacker and kind of figure out, okay, they're switching schemes. You know, we've got kind of new faces, a couple of old faces that we don't know that much about, to be totally honest.
Right.
You know, I guess if we start there, that's a position where I'll be honest, you know, like when I look at Darius Leonard in college, I liked him less the more I watched him. And he's a fun player, but I also thought the size worries me. What's his exact position? How's he going to fit? I understand the Colts really like him. You know, how good is he right away? That's a question I've got.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do does John Simon make that transition? I know there's been talk about him maybe not being a great fit. Who am I forgetting? I mean, Anthony Walker, what do we know about him enough to say, you know, he can be a starter or something like that. So, you know, the other guys, Najee Good, who am I forgetting here?
There's you know, plenty of them, but you're right about all of them. This linebacking group is one of the most concerning areas on the team, if not the most concerning for myself and a lot of Colts fans, quite honestly. There's no argument on me or from me on this one at all. I mean, you've got guys that are making kind of noise, I suppose you could say, through the offseason program. Guys like, you know, Zaire Franklin, Matthew Adams is a rookie, obviously. Tyrell Adams has gotten some work with the ones. Obviously, we know that this is a lot of, you know, OTAs and mini camp stuff. But the Colts in the past, anyways, and this is, I know we got a new regime in-house and all that, but in the past, you could always kind of get a couple nuggets out of mini camp. You know, a couple little things here and there, and you could see who are they putting in there. They at least like this guy. If they're putting him in with the ones, they at least like him and see something they want to, you know, you can pretty much guess that guy is going to get some at least second round reps early in training camp once it pops up. So there's been some guys like that. But as a whole, I mean, you've got Jeremiah George, who I think is a solid player. Don't know where he's going to fit in. Antonio Morrison, this is absolutely his last shot, in my opinion, yep, with the Indianapolis Colts to win that Sam linebacker spot, because he's not a guy they can afford to have on the field in passing situations. And he was just not great against the run last year. He's going to have to be that guy that is just watch out for him because he'll take your head off. That's really what he has going for him right now, as far as I'm concerned. But like Terrell Adams, like you said, you mentioned Anthony Walker. That's another guy. Basically, Sky Moore has been a guy who's gotten some consistency through here. They like him in a coverage situation with all the interceptions he had in college. He's a guy that they're looking to drop back and use in that mic position a little bit. But they've also used, like you said, Najee Good, who's got a little bit of experience there. Wouldn't hurt to start the season out with a guy like that, regardless if he's borderline first team. Wouldn't hurt to start week one with a guy who knows what's going on for sure and has for a little while.
Yep.
But this is impossible for me to argue with. Like, I legitimately want us to disagree on at least something here, because I think that a lot of people out in the ether are just, like you said, 4 or 5 wins for the Colts and their roster sucks and all this. But this is a serious – I don't want to say that it's a problem area, because we don't know that yet. We could have 2 or 3 of these first and second year guys come in and just really fall in at home. But another guy like Darius Leonard, like you added, it was kind of funny because the one thing I do disagree on is the more I watched him, the more I liked him. Whereas I just kind of shut the tape off on him early. I was like, this guy does nothing for me. But the more I watched him, the more I had a couple guys get in my ear, like, watch him in this situation, watch him on this game. You know, I'm like, all right. So I watched some more and started to like him a little more. The more I watched him, I liked him a little bit more. By the time the Colts actually drafted him, I was kind of on board with it. But at the same time, he's coming in here with a whole new scheme. He's missed a lot of offseason work. That's what bothers me about him mostly. But otherwise, this linebacking group is a mystery.
Yeah. And with Moore, I mean, it's so funny how time can change things so quickly. I mean, before his back injury, he was one of the more intriguing little prospects out there in college football because he had that kind of safety build. And, you know, what position was he? Who cares? He could play. Now, Leonard obviously has kind of become that guy almost where he's, you know, I could have said 2 years ago I thought Sky Moore would be a high second round pick, and now it's Leonard who's that guy. And so, yeah, I mean, maybe those are two blueprint fits for what Matt Eberflus wants. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's exactly the kind of like rangy little playmakers who can fit this system. And most of the time, there's going to be two of them on the field. You know, I mean, that's the reality of it. So it's not something that we have to sit there and pull our hair out about. But as you pointed out, Antonio Morrison could be your week one starter, or he could be cut in, September 1st. So I have a feeling, as we saw last year, cut down day, you know, they cut a fourth rounder, they made trades, I have a feeling there's still going to be an element of that. And linebacker could be a spot where that gets added to very late in the process or during preseason or something like that.
I agree. I think it's unnecessary. Let me ask you this. Do you hate the fact that the Colts didn't go after a guy like Michael Kendricks when he was more than available for a fairly good price?
Yeah, that was the one guy. Like, I try not to get too excited about May, June free agents, you know, because there's usually a reason why they're unemployed and stuff. But yeah, that's young player, athletic, obviously familiarity with Reich. And so, yeah, that would have been one that made some sense. I was a little bit surprised, A, where he landed, and B, that maybe the Colts didn't make a firmer push. But maybe that's indicative that they like Adams, that they like Moore, that they think Leonard's got, you know, a chance to be a, you know, 50, 60 snap player right away. So, you know, if they're not willing to add that salary and want to take that sort of slow and steady approach and develop the guys they've had, I can understand it.
Yeah, and that's kind of, it's so funny because the more that Reich says that, let me preface it this way. Everybody's kind of excited about the change. Nobody was happy that Pagano was still here last year, any of that stuff. Everybody's excited about Reich's change. Similarly, we don't know enough about as a play caller, as a head coach, to really gauge a firm spot for predictions and such. So you're kind of looking at everything that he says in his press conferences, like, we really like this group. We really like this group, you know. And you hear it, and it's like, God, that just reminds me so much of what Pagano used to say. And you could never believe the thing he said. You could never believe it because it was like, look, he just don't look like that on the field, man. How can you keep saying that? You know, they look terrible on the field. I think Colts fans are just kind of collectively trying to hush themselves, like, okay, we have to give this guy a chance to say this. This is still coach speak, but we've got to get the opportunity, give him the opportunity to see if it's for real. So I think people are very reticent to believe into that.
Oh, and you know, it's funny because talking to some folks in Philadelphia in 2016, they said the same thing about Doug, where he's a nice guy, we like him. You know, the Chip Kelly thing had run its course after Andy Reid had run its course, and there was this fear that, oh my gosh, we hired a nice guy because of his connections to Andy Reid. Now, obviously, that has nothing to do with Reich in Indy, but it almost sounds like the same thing. Like, oh boy, here we go. We don't, you know, look, nothing against Matt Patricia. You know, the tough guy, you know, the kind of the old school type of coach or whatever. But this approach works. You know, this can work. You know, just because a guy says some flowery things, it's okay, you know. And so I would tell Colts fans, give him a shot. I understand that the process didn't work out the way it was supposed to work out, and he sort of was a second choice, maybe not everybody's second choice, I don't know. But all I know is that people in that were raving about Frank Reich and were just saying, look, He's got what it takes. I don't care about necessarily the play calling experience or whatever. He's called plays, sure, but it's really that the makeup of him as a coach is impressive. And I think he's kind of that Doug Peterson like guy where the looks can be a little deceiving, and he's sharp as a tack. He's got the respect of his players. I think he will in Indy, and so it's just kind of a, I don't know. I'm not saying they're like going to win the division. I'm saying this is a team that I'm going to be fascinated to follow, and I think, you know, Reich is going to be able to do some things there.
Absolutely. And when you look at the Reich situation, you think, okay, so this guy's got his shot. And I think that a lot of people were excited that he was the one who ended up floating to the top, because a lot of people had him pegged as a possible first go-round candidate with McDaniels and all that because of his ties to Indy to begin with. You know what I mean? And that just kind of really, I mean, there was talk about it, but it never really floated to the surface. And then on the second go-round, they landed him. And I think that Colts fans were kind of, oh, good. You know, it's not somebody completely different than who we had at least initially thought was a possibility to begin with. So,
there was so much buildup, though. You know, I mean, whether it was McDaniels or maybe Jim Harbaugh or whatever. I mean, there was
there
so
always
much.
Is.
Yeah, and I get it. I'm glad that Colts fans at least are sort of figuring out that, hey, you know, this isn't just because it's a little bit of a different hire doesn't make it a bad one. So I hope that's the attitude, and that he gets a long enough leash from fans, and that he gets, you know, his quarterback and everything to kind of work for him.
Yep. Everybody had their favorite, not me. I just kind of hit it bed at night and got on my knees before I went to sleep and just prayed that it wasn't Gruden when they were going to get just anybody but Gruden. I didn't care. Honestly, I didn't.
Right.
Just as long as it's not him, I want nothing to do with him. And it looks like at least, I mean, just the way that he went through the draft and has been building this Raiders team, I'm pretty happy that, you know, that was my thoughts at least on it. And he may turn it around. Woof.
Yeah, can you imagine that approach in Indy? I mean, can you imagine had they basically undercut the Ballard hire and brought in Gruden and, you know, and gone full like veteran mode? I mean, it would have been such a strange thing. You know, we can win now with Andrew and you know, undoing what they do and everything like that. It would be so shocking to the system. So I think Colts fans would be in a totally different place than where the Raiders are at.
Yep, it would have been about the same approach, only about 10 years less into history of the approach that Pagano has, with maybe better actual in-game coaching, and that's about it. Otherwise, no movement up or down the charts. You know, the Colts, all right, another another four-win season. I'd be on board with that had he been the coach, to be quite honest with you. So, Eric, we're going to take a quick 5-second break here real quick, and then we'll come back and talk about the cornerback spot. Welcome back to the Colts Cast, guys. All right, Eric Edholm still here talking about our issues with the Colts roster right now. Now, these are his problem areas so far. We've talked to receivers, or the receiving game at least. We've talked to linebackers. Now, his third spot that we're talking here, his problem with the Colts roster is his cornerback crew. And I think that we can all kind of guess as to why. Inexperience, you know, some guys who are coming up that are expected to be starters with not a whole lot underneath them and not a lot of baggage following them. But other than just the pure youth and the no names kind of on this roster at corner, what are your thoughts on this group?
Well, I liked Quincy Wilson coming out, and obviously last season was a disappointment for him and for Colts fans who wanted to see him. And, you know, I get that. But you look and you see teams with a lot of second and third year players who haven't yet broken out, you know, that's often a position where, or a situation where you guys, you know, can thrive where, okay, you say to yourself, hey, this guy plays up to almost the first round potential he showed in college. There were a lot of people who thought he should be a first round pick. Mm-hmm. Okay. Then you have yourself maybe a possible number one. Okay. You saw obviously what some of the surprises were able to do at that position last year, which is nice. You know, and you have, you know, obviously Nate Harrison played well. It was a fifth or sixth round pick last year. Played well.
Yep.
You know, I don't know exactly how good Kenny Moore is. Pierre Desir has always been a interesting guy to me, but I don't know that he's ever. I don't know. It's to me, it's a little bit of a muddled group. Not nearly what we were just talking about at linebacker,
right?
But a lot of maybes, mm-hmm. a lot of, you know, possible solutions. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't that this was a destitute position. It's more that you'd love to see these guys come up and make turnovers. You know, you'd love to see them make game changing plans. You know, and be able to slow down. You know, the Hopkins and the Corey Davis is the world and kind of take care of their business that way, I guess.
Mm-hmm. And it's an interesting group. And last year when Desir kind of outplayed apparently Vontae Davis enough in practice and in his brief time getting in the game before they released Vontae, you know, he deserved, in my opinion, to be starter because Vontae Davis could not, for the past couple years, he could not cover anybody further than 10 yards. You know,
right.
After that, it was over with, put it over his head, it's a catch. That's just the way it was. People don't like to admit that, but it's absolutely the truth. Desir is a little bit more of a playmaker. He's a little bit more at home in this this scheme, I think, from his college days. Quincy Wilson was come out as, at least that I was considered better at a zone-type scheme.
Yep.
But a lot of people really liked his man coverage. So I'm still kind of interested to see how he can go from last year being in a predominantly man coverage playbook to going to something a little further back into his history with some zone catches and such, or some zone coverages and such. Then you've got other guys like Nate Harrison, a guy like you mentioned, a guy who came onto this roster as a rookie, was not expected to be much more than special teams help, and became the starting nickel. I mean, for, 14 games of the year was the – not
yep.
starting nickel. I mean, he only got like four starts throughout the year, but he was their nickel, you know, and that allowed Darius Butler to move back to safety where they had no help after injuries and so on. So a lot of this has come up, and they are extremely high on Kenny Moore, which was always surprising to me because of not just his size – but because I just didn't feel like he had enough pop on him. But he was clearly a very solid tackler last year. I think that he was second or third in the cornerbacks behind. I think he might have been actually right behind Rashad Melvin for some reason. And you just didn't notice him. You know, he was not a guy who jumped out on tape, not a guy who jumped out in the games like, man, look at Kenny Moore. But occasionally he had those moments. So this group, I mean, they've got some names. Everybody wants to see what Wilson does. Everybody wants to see if Harrison can actually, you know, because last year in camp, Eric, they had Nate Harrison out on the edges as a boundary corner through the
yep.
initial stages of training camp. And then they moved him into nickel. So is that something maybe he fits better out there in a 4-3 scheme? Does he become one of the boundary corners? Is a guy like Kenny Moore possibly leaning into maybe a nickel role in this type of thing? It's just there's a lot of things that can come from this, and I think Desir is going to benefit from this as well. He's one of the older corners on the team. In fact, I think he is the oldest at like 27. So he's not old, but they've got a really youthful group. It's going to be a fun group to see how it plays out in camp, but ultimately, I think fans are just hoping that this group can be that group that nobody's talking about that can come in and make a real impression throughout the season, disrupting some catches, maybe getting a few extra turnovers, and then you add some of the playmakers at safety, you know, with Hooker and such, and some of the tip balls and things of that nature. I think this group is a group that we're probably more hopeful on than some of the others, but it's very close to a similar problem area, as you mentioned, at linebacker. Not completely lost, but there's just nothing to really get from this group until we see them in between the lines once week one rolls around.
Yeah, right. I mean, obviously, and, you know, not unlike linebacker, I think, if I recall, people were kind of saying, hey, you know, why aren't you guys going after Brashad Breland or somebody, or like that, you know, that veteran help guy, as like we were talking about with Kendricks at linebacker.
Yeah.
And again, their kind of inactivity almost, and if people are kind of complaining about, oh, what are they doing and why aren't they signing guys? This might speak to either A, the price of the player we're talking about, or the health or whatever, but also that they like their guys. They want to see what they have. And so I remember Desir coming out. I mean, he was on such a different curve than everybody else, coming from, you know, a soccer background, the small school.
Was it Lindenwood?
He had the size, but what was that?
Lindenwood or something?
Lindenwood in Missouri, right, right. I think he was like a 23-year-old senior, too. So we're talking about not your typical 27-year-old. He's probably on the same development as a 24-year-old in some cases. So, I was there for the two joint practices in training camp. In my first I was kind of watching the DBs a little bit. I was watching the Lions receivers. I was writing about the Lions wide receivers. And I'm saying, who's this Harrison kid? He looks good. Kenny Moore, if I remember, he came later. Is that right? Was he cut by?
New England.
I was trying to remember. I don't think he was even there, right?
No.
Kenny Moore was in New England. They waived him, right? Okay.
Yep.
But Harrison caught my eye early. They moved him, like you said. He became this pretty, you can hang your hat on him. He did well. He did a good job in the nickel role. But I don't know whether he fits outside or inside. I can't say. It's tough for me to know. I will say that, in zone you can cover up some stuff, obviously, and as long as you're tackling well, as long as you're rerouting receivers and things like that, and you can hide some things. But yeah, I don't think this is nearly as big a concern as what we were talking about with linebacker, but kind of like receiver without that Hilton guy, unless Wilson just steps in and plays amazingly well from day one in camp.
Right. So I kind of at the end of the day here, I mean, we don't disagree at all at linebacker. I'm going to say that I disagree with you at wide receiver only because I feel like what Andrew Luck brings to the offense is going to help that team smooth over. All the receiving components of that are going to kind of get some of that benefit from Andrew Luck and his experience. But at the same time, that cornerback group, I can't disagree with you. As much as I like some of those pieces and some of those players, I can't necessarily disagree because they don't have an established pass rush to help them. That I could say the same thing about, similar to Andrew Luck, that pass rush could help those corners, in this new zone scheme and make it to where they can basically just free for all and go after the ball. But that's just not the case. The Colts don't have an established pass rush. They got some really nice pieces like Kamiko Ture, and they've got, a couple other guys between the draft and just some second-year guys as well, like Basham, to build on Jabal Sheard. John Simon, where's he end up? We don't know. But that's just not – I wouldn't say they're established. They've got some quality guys that we're expecting to kind of blow up this year a little bit more and progress, but the secondary does not have the luxury of having an established pass rush or that kind of, like the guy you said, you can hang your hat on as a pass rusher, at least get one guy who's constantly creating pressure, and that's just not what they've got right now. So a lot of anything on the defense right now, if you don't have that guy who can hold it down, whether it be that number one corner that's a lockdown guy, you don't have that Mike linebacker who can kind of make up for the rest of the linebackers in that scheme, but you do have a guy out at safety who can erase a lot. You just don't have a lot of established along the front seven at this point, as far as it's anybody really going to scare anybody, and that's something the Colts have to do this year before they can kind of take that next step, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's funny that, I was sort of looking before the draft at, like, I was making lists of, like, big needs, little needs, and then kind of leaving alone,
right.
Which positions their team. And I felt at one point like, well, hey, the Colts' depth is pretty good up front. But as you pointed out, who are the dudes? You know, who are the true difference makers? That's a worry. Don't forget, and again, I know you brought this up. I mean, Malik Hooker going 15th in the draft was stunning to me at the time. I thought he was one of the five best players in that draft. And so you're right. If he's out there, you know, if Earl Thomas has seen his best days, Hooker could be the next guy. I'm not even scared to put that on tape. Like, I think he's that good or has that high a ceiling. So,
right.
You know, having him back there and just getting a little bit of a pass rush from Toure and, you know, some of these new guys as well, you know, you can see the big picture a little bit. It's a little fuzzy, but I can see how this would be a very capable defense. I think they'll give up yards. Mm-hmm. I think they'll make you drive the length of the field. I think their hope is turnovers and field goals. Let's hold them to three. Let's get clamped down in the red zone. You know, let's get those two turnovers a game. Get 32 in a season, that's great. You know,
yeah,
so
right.
I mean that's really the plan, obviously. And is it going to work out perfectly this year? I don't think so. But I don't hate the kind of infrastructure that they've started putting in. I just want to see a little bit more clarity at some of these spots that we've lined up.
Mm-hmm. I think that last year's draft class is under some pressure to really produce. Basham, Hooker's got to stay healthy. You know, I want to see some significant growth out of Hairston. And I think that, you know, we just want to see that kind of a thing, that initial rookie season. You don't have to be rookie of the year, but give us some constant, you know, some constants and grow each game a little bit. But that second year group right now, they got a lot of pressure. They've got to do something to make Colts fans really believe that this process is actually in the process of becoming true. You can't just say it's going to be a 2 or 3 year thing and then have your second year guys kind of missing the boat, you know. So this is something that Colts fans are going to be really looking forward to seeing, not only in camp, but in the beginning parts of the season. We really want to see some growth out of these guys because, believe me, Colts fans have been spoiled in the past with Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck. You know, there has been some spoiling going on, but the Colts are ready and Colts fans are ready to get back in the saddle for cheering for a contender. And I think that everybody agrees that Chris Ballard can do that. We just need to see it happen now on Sundays. So,
yeah, and those second and third year guys, I'm telling you, like, those are the ones when you look and say, all right, which team can make a jump? It's the teams that have the most number of second and third year, obviously quarterback, but
right.
Second and third year guys, if they make that jump, that's where, like, the hidden benefit comes from. That's where you get teams like the Rams in the last year, or you get the Eagles. Or that's really where your biggest jump can come from right there.
Absolutely. Folks, you guys can follow Eric on Twitter at Eric_Edholm. That's Edholm. You guys can also catch some of his work at Pro Football Weekly. Eric, it's been a joy to have you on, man. Thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you, Matt. Appreciate it. Hit me up anytime. Let's reconvene midseason, see how our predictions go.
I'm looking forward to it, folks. Thank you guys for joining us today. Thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. We'll talk to you next time right here on the Colts Cast. Stampede Blue.